I'm gonna be very honest with all of you. I don't know how to do that yet, because I'm being on 12 is probably the hardest thing ever.
Joining us to talk about Browns football, Scott Petrick with the Chronicle Telegram. Good morning, Scott.
Hey guys.
Kind of a different post game yesterday, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I thought it was so important. I wound up doing pretty much my whole quote unquote game story about it, just because you don't usually see a coach talk like that after a game.
Of course, there was a time between the game and there was a meeting with the uppity ups, the higher ups about that. Obviously, they probably were just kind of, you know, talking about the future for the Browns. But Hugh Jackson, for most of these 11 other losses, sort of maintained kind of control in a sense. I would think this is the one that sort of shows us really how he's feeling about it.
Right. And that's what made yesterday special. There's been times earlier in the season where you could see a little bit of a crack. You know, you could kind of see the frustration getting to him, but not to the degree of yesterday. And that clip you played right before you came to me, you know, you could see that I'm sitting in the front row. You could see the tears in his eyes. He's kind of biting his lip almost. The emotion was getting to him. But then what impressed me is how quickly he gathered himself, and then he got back on his message. He said, when we win a Super Bowl, he said, we're not going to feel this way after the season ever again. You better get us now because we're not going to be this bad. And so he got back on his message, and I think it was good that he showed the disappointment, the frustration. And he said those words, disappointed, frustrated, sad, mad. So he let everybody know, the fan base, his players, how much it means to him and how this is killing him, but yet turned around and said, but it's not a permanent thing. We're going to get this figured out. So it was unique, and I think it wasn't a bad thing at all for Hugh Jackson.
Scott, was there some sort of meeting or get-together with the, as Bruce called, the uppity-ups, and does this mean anything?
Well, here's what I could tell you, that he usually talks to us 15 minutes after the game, give or take, and yesterday was 40 minutes after the game. I saw him emerge from his office, which is just off the locker room. Somebody else saw Sashi Brown, who runs the football department, come out of the office as well. So I think he was meeting with Sashi Brown. I'm not sure who else was in the meeting. Hugh Jackson said they have the meeting every week right after the game. This one just took longer, and he said he was long-winded. So I don't think it means anything as far as job security or anything like that. But I think it means that Hugh Jackson is in this meeting telling him just how bad his roster is. You know, when you talk about why you're 0-12, it's because this guy can't make this play, and we're in this position, and this guy doesn't get this done. And Hugh kind of referred to that when he would talk about, you know, we have to play perfect. He said it a couple times yesterday. You have to play perfect, and football's not a perfect game. Nobody plays perfectly, but we have to play perfect. And to me, that's him saying he was given a young roster that lacks talent, and therefore the margin for error is so small that that's how you become 0-12.
Now, we all knew that he was getting a young roster, but not necessarily, you know, the hope was there would be a lot of talent that would sort of emerge as the season progressed. You don't see that happening?
I don't. And to me, that's one of the more worrisome things about this whole situation. You know, we have the whole analytics focus in the front office. And you have guys that were never in these positions before. Sashi Brown is not a quote-unquote football guy. Chief Strategy Officer Paul DePodesta is not a football guy. He came from baseball. So there were some, you know, I think outside the organization, there's a lot of questions about how would this new setup, this new front office handle itself. And they had 14 draft picks. They put such a premium on stockpiling draft picks. Well, if you're going to do that, you have to hit on these picks. And you have to get impact players. And so far, we haven't seen it. You know, Corey Coleman, the rookie receiver, had a touchdown yesterday. He's shown flashes. So maybe you hit on him, which you should. He was your first pick. You know, Emmanuel Ogba, the defensive end slash pass rusher, has shown up occasionally. But none of these guys you say, yeah, he's a difference maker. I'm going to build around him. And that's a problem. And if that's the case, then the worry becomes, what do you do next year in April when you have two first-round draft picks? You have an extra second-round draft pick, including what probably will be the first pick in the draft. Because if you don't hit on those picks, then this rebuild will be like every other rebuild that fails. The whole key is hitting on these draft picks, and I just haven't seen enough to say, yes, I trust Sashi Brown to be the guy making the draft picks come April.
We're talking to Scott Petrick of the Chronicle-Telegram. Maybe Hugh was showing Sashi the tweets from the Atlanta Falcons that apparently...
Yeah, that was interesting. And, you know, I understand, you know, Taylor Gabriel, he was a Browns receiver for a couple of years, and he showed a little bit when he was here, but nothing crazy. He's a small, undersized receiver with great speed. And he actually had a pretty good training camp, I thought, but the Browns decided to keep all four of the receivers they drafted. And they cut Taylor Gabriel. He winds up with Kyle Shanahan, who used to be his coordinator here, and he's making an impact for a good Atlanta team. Two touchdowns yesterday, has five on the season. And Atlanta, their team site kind of trolled the Browns on Twitter. But it's those kind of decisions. Now, the problem is, Taylor Gabriel wasn't old. You know, he was in his third season. So he's a guy you could keep and you could also, quote-unquote, build around. Or he's not, you know, it's not like you're keeping an older veteran. But the Browns wanted to keep the guys they drafted. And that's a problem when you switch regimes so often. They all fall in love with their guys, the guys they picked. And there's no reason to think right now that a guy like Jordan Payton, who I think was a fourth-round draft pick, is going to ever be as good as Taylor Gabriel is right now. And that's a problem, and that comes from ego, thinking you know better than your previous than your predecessors.
Well, the Atlanta Falcons went all the way back to Julio Jones to kind of thank the Browns in that tweet.
That was about four regimes ago, but I know what you're saying.
But if you look at, I mean, if he's still playing, we had an opportunity to get a receiver. If you're talking about issues with receiver, there's, you know, looking in the past, there's ghosts that haunt us every year, it seems.
There's no doubt about that. And I think another area where Julio Jones is relevant is, you know, the Browns have had a lot of different front offices that have chosen to trade down and trade a high draft pick, like Julio Jones. I think it was the fifth pick in the draft. The Browns traded that pick so they could have three or four other draft picks. And I get it in theory. You look at the roster, you say, man, we need to get better everywhere, so let's go get four players instead of one player. And the Browns did it this year when they traded the number two pick in the draft. The problem is, if you have a much better chance to find an impact player at the top of the draft than you do with three or four picks spread out throughout the draft. And I think we saw that with Julio Jones, and there's a chance we see that with Carson Wentz, a quarterback, you know, who the Browns passed up at number two. And if you pass on impact players, you wind up getting just a bunch of guys. And teams don't win because of a bunch of guys. They win because you have enough difference makers across your roster, and the Browns just don't have any of those. Well, I'm not going to say any. They don't have enough of those type of players.
The NFL gives you that high draft pick because you're so bad, and they're basically saying, pick an impact player. And
right.
We seem to go against that.
No, the opposite philosophy is you can miss those on those impact players just as easily, right? You take a guy at number four, and he's the wrong guy. And if you trade out and you have three picks instead, the odds are better that you're going to hit on a player. But that just hasn't worked out for the Browns. In theory, I get it, but it hasn't worked out. And we're going to see what the Browns do this year because they're going to have they're likely going to have the number one pick in the draft. They're going to have a high pick for sure. Will they trade it again? If they get the offer, do they trade it again for four more draft picks or draft picks in the future? And if you do that, it just feels like you're kind of kicking the rebuild down the road. And I, you know what? I don't think Hugh Jackson's going to stand for that. You know, I think he was real yesterday with his emotions, and he's going to want to win starting next year. And I don't know if, you know, does that mean playoffs? I don't know. But he's not going to put up with this, so therefore you have to infuse talent into the roster, or you're going to have a coach who, you know, who is upset or threatens to leave or something.
Scott, what do you think about the Browns' apparent disinterest in special team play?
Yeah, that's interesting. I, I, I don't think it is disinterest. But I'll tell you this, the way they constructed the roster did not set itself up for them to have, again, I'm using this word a lot, impact players in the return game. And it's so obvious the difference between when they had Josh Cribbs, when they had Travis Benjamin in the return game. They used to think, hey, if the Browns get a touchdown or they swing the field position, that's how you spring an upset. But that's not even a threat anymore. It's not even a thought anymore because their kickoff return is last in the league. Their punt return is average at best with Duke Johnson. Now, maybe we'll see Corey Coleman there as we get later in the season. They wanted him to concentrate on receiver first, and he could have an impact as a punt returner. But you're right. I mean, that used to be a strength for the Browns, and it no longer is, and it just kind of cuts down on the number of chances, the number of ways you can win a game.
What's going to happen over this bye week? It's kind of an odd bye week because we don't really expect much kind of, you know, heads will roll kind of a thing. Are we just waiting for RG3 to come back, or is this 2 weeks going to be used for something else?
No, I mean, it's a real late bye week. The players will practice just a little bit, and then they'll get a chance to recharge and regroup. The hope is RG3 clears his final medical test. He's cleared for contact. They can come back and play. I don't know if Hugh Jackson would reinsert him into the lineup as early as December 11th against Cincinnati. That's a possibility. I don't know if Hugh decides, okay, four or five practices is enough for RG3 to start again. If not, I fully expect him to start the week after or the week after. He's going to start this season, whether it's two, three, or four games, assuming the doctors clear him. And at least that gives you something to look to watch. You know, first of all, I think he gives them a decent chance, a better chance to win a game. Plus, Hugh Jackson liked this guy in the offseason. He liked him week one. That's why he was your starter. So I think Hugh Jackson wants to see what his offense looks like with RG3. He wants to see how RG3 looks. And then the rest of it's going to be trying to do everything possible to get that one win. Because nobody on the roster, and Hugh Jackson especially, does not want 0-16 on their resumes.
Maybe they can spend the week watching some of the college games that are going on this week and, you know, look at their future somewhere out there.
Do a little scouting.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure, I know guys in the organization are. I mean, there's no doubt that they've been looking at quarterbacks and other players for months now. It's just going to be a matter of who has final say and who does, I guess, owner Jimmy Haslam trust to make the biggest picks in, you know, not his franchise's history, but the most important picks as his franchise moves forward.
Well, we move forward bye week and then four more games the month of December. Maybe we'll get a Christmas present along the way somewhere so we don't have to go 0-16. Scott Petrick at the Chronicle Telegram, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.